Join longtime local and social butterfly Michelle Dragony as she flits up and down the coastside on her intrepid cruiser Flame, chatting with coastal characters at every turn.
Here we are today with Sean McFetridge, who is the new superintendent of CUSD, Cabrillo Unified School District, and I'm just getting to know Sean. So Sean, how'd you get here? Who are you?
I started this job July 15th, and previous to this, I had been working in Alameda Unified School District in Alameda near Oakland since 2000, off and on. I was there 14 out of the last 19 years, spent the last 5 years there as superintendent, was assistant superintendent there, was a principal of an early college high school there, a director of secondary education, career technical education, a vice principal in the district. Yeah, I served in a lot of roles. I'd taken some time off to go back to grad school and to finish my dissertation and to consult. And before that, I was at San Quentin State Prison for 5 years.
Whoa. That's a disparate, yeah, not as an inmate.
That's exactly right. So I worked there and I taught English as a second language. And I...
You're bilingual, are you?
Yes, I am. I'm functionally bilingual. Yes, it's true.
That's
and
good.
So I taught mostly... Spanish-speaking students there at San Quentin, English as a second language, and I also built and ran the Associate of Arts degree college program there, and I also taught on death row there. That was interesting times.
Oh, that's a podcast just in and of itself. Oh,
everything I needed to know I learned in prison.
That's a good line. I like it.
So, and then before that, I was a high school teacher, elementary school teacher in Southern California. So,
is that where you're from?
I'm from, the Inland Empire near Claremont College's Upland, California.
Okay.
Is where I was born and raised.
And I think you said something about going to boarding school?
Oh, I did. As a kid, my parents insisted that I go to private school. My sisters had gone to public school, and they sent me to private school, and they found it very odd that I would choose a career in public education, but I do think it's so important for the country and for the people who live here, and I've been working in public education since the early 90s.
Yeah, I think I got my teaching credential in early 90s, and I know I homeschooled my son on and off because I was so frustrated, you know, with the system. But he did end up, you know, going to both CUNY and the high school, and I thought the teachers were fantastic.
I think the heart of
the teachers in this district is huge.
In the month or so that I've been here since July 15, I think it's been evident that you have a great community here.
Mm-hmm.
You have so many strong teachers here that I've met and support staff, and I think it's a great school system and a great community, a lot of benefactors. I do think we are suffering, as are many districts now, with inadequate funding from the state. And that's always what I'm going to bring it down to, because I think it's the main thing that everybody needs to talk about.
It is the main thing that everybody needs to talk about. And I think the way schools are funded is very arcane, both historically, you know, and in terms of coming to understand it, just as a journalist. I mean, I've sat down with Crystal Leach. I did her coffee at Farallon. I've sat down with Sophia. I watched your presentation. And in a nutshell, if you want to get it down to, is that schools are not being funded properly. Proposition 13 funding, that the whole idea of residents funding schools is a sort of weird 1970s idea, but now when you extrapolate the baby boomers and an aging population, you can have eligibility issues with the parcel tax. In other words, they can be exempt, so that reduces your pool of funds. But we were talking just briefly, it's the corporations. It's the businesses that they're end users of the product that you do, right? How do we fix this?
Well, I mean, on that point, I mean, I just remember being in middle school, my parents saying, Sean, we send you to private schools. Why should we vote for or against Prop 13? And my sister at the time had been working in prison. And I said, it seems to me that if we defund the social service net in the state, you're going to have a lot more people in prison if we don't fund public education. I was very much the beneficiary of a great public school, public university system when I went to UCLA. But now we see University of California really out of reach for a lot of families. Community colleges are going to be given more and more money so that students can attend community college for free for 2 years. I think Gavin Newsom has done a good job on that. I was involved with the Alameda Promise back in the day, years ago, to try to do that. But I do think that we have a problem now with not funding public education, and that's caused a lot of other problems. I do have hope that next year, when it'll be on the ballot, that people will consider voting to close corporate tax loopholes for Prop 13, and that could get us a lot more money for public education and public services so that corporations pay their fair share. But that won't do it entirely for us. As you know, the board has voted to put a parcel tax on the ballot, a renewal parcel tax. It's still the same parcel tax, $150. Seniors have exemption. Certain disabilities have exemption. Contiguous parcels have exemption. But, you know, these parcel taxes, more and more Bay Area school districts are going to these parcel taxes, and this parcel tax is actually less than a lot of other local neighboring mm-hmm. Bay Area districts, and that represents $1.6 million. Without the parcel tax, we're certainly going to have to cut $1.6 million. With the parcel tax, we wouldn't have to cut that. I think that's information. I'm not advocating either way, but that's just information the public need to know. Seniors do need to know they're exempt. People with SSI disability.
How do they
exemption.
Go about their exemption? Do they come down to the district and fill out a piece of paper?
I think that's my understanding, and I think they'll try to roll the exemptions from last time too. Is my understanding of this, but
okay.
It's pretty easy. Again, I can't advocate because I'm on district time, but I can't advocate for the parcel tax. But the facts, I can give information.
Right.
The facts are it represents $1.6 million of our budget. It is just a replacement, and if we don't have it, that's $1.6 we have to cut. Plus, I know that you discussed this and saw the last board meeting, we do have other millions of dollars to cut from the budget because of deficit spending, because of the way that state funding has increased mandates upon us, but never mm-hmm. really funded us past 2008 levels.
Right. Yeah. 2008, a decade. And the inflation that we've suffered. So is that going to be addressed in terms of just the inflation value of funding? That's a state level decision.
That's a state level decision. I mean, local control funding formula, they keep telling us, Jerry Brown, when he was governor, said, hey, we're returning you to local control funding formula, fully funded 2 years in advance. But what people don't understand is that really represents sort of akin to 2008 funding levels, and it doesn't take into account the fact that the state also added on new costs to us. Certainly we've seen a rise in the costs of doing business for building infrastructure. There's not been a lot of money from the state for that. We've seen a rise in the cost from special education costs, mm-hmm. With increased numbers of students being identified for special education services and no money really coming from the feds or from state for that. And then pension costs. The truth of the matter is that more and more pension costs from the state have been mandated upon districts and on employees. Employees are paying more of their pension costs. Districts are paying more of those pension costs. And this is becoming a situation that, you know, I just happen to have it here. There's an article by WestEd called Silent Recession, and it says why California school districts are underwater despite increases in funding. This was released last year. The truth of the matter is these costs, special education, building
ESL.
Infrastructure, services for students who need them, extra services, mm-hmm. cost extra money, and the state, those costs have outpaced the state revenues. They do not, and the simple fact of the matter is we have expenses that we can't pay and that we have to make cuts because the state doesn't fund us for all the things they say we have to do.
So am I correct in understanding in 5 years, if we don't get more money one way or the other, that you'll have to basically lay off about 50 people?
I think what you're going to see is at the next board meeting, we will come with a corrected, true closing of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers look, I think, more alarming than they were presented previously.
Oh, geez.
So I think not just in 5 years, I think what you'll see is by December of this year, the San Mateo County Office of Education and the Fiscal Crisis Management Assistance Team will work with them, and they will require us to show millions of dollars in actionable cuts over the next 3 years and to have those cuts ready to show in December. the state is mandated by Assembly Bill 1200 to basically put a district on notice when their three-year spending account shows that they're going to be in deficit spending. And that's where Cabrillo Unified School District, like other districts, that's where we are right now. So we will be working in the months ahead to share with the board and with the schools and the community different cuts we can make to try to make sure that we are not deficit spending. But it will be millions. I think it will always be employees because 83% of our budget is basically on staffing.
Your budget's $40
million? $33
million, $33 million?
Yeah, okay. Approximately $33, $35 million. So, you know, you can certainly see that cutting that amount of money, it's like cutting 10% of your budget. It's going to have to come from people. Yeah. We will look at services. We will look at contracts. We will look at all kinds of ways to do efficiencies. And we will try to keep those cuts away from the classroom as much as possible, but it will mean cuts in other services for sure. Parcel tax certainly would avoid $1.6 million of it, but there will be other cuts that will need to be made, assuming that we don't get any more money from the state. I am also hopeful on one level that AB 39, Assembly Bill 39, sponsored by Murat Succi and others, that looks like it's going through the Capitol. But again, that's sort of aspirational targets for local control funding formula. Doesn't guarantee us any money. It's hard to say what's going to happen and whether or not the state will be able to afford any more money for us. Certainly we're in a holding pattern, and back to your idea of school funding, we're always waiting for January for a governor's budget proposal and then how that works through the legislature and then what it finally means. It's kind of a crazy way to do it. And a lot of districts, because of declining enrollments in the state, because of infrastructure needs and buildings that have wear and tear or past their useful life or mounting increasing special education costs or increasing mandates on us by the state to cover pension costs when previously that had not been the case. It's leading to what WestEd and others are calling a silent recession, where I think they say around 50% of districts are looking at having to make cuts in the next 3 years. So that they don't go into the deficit spending situation and position we are in now.
It must be an epidemic statewide. I mean, we're all in the same position, right?
I think you will see that some districts fare better, and that's usually districts that have local funding, like parcel taxes, that are higher and
like
help
Woodside.
Them. Woodside is a good example. You know, in the East Bay, we used to always make this description between Berkeley, Alameda, Oakland, Piedmont. Berkeley, Piedmont, Oakland had much higher parcel taxes than Alameda. And as a result, Alameda, we were cutting and those others were able to maintain. I think the other thing you're going to see is that parcel taxes are one way out of it, but it's not the whole way out of it. Really, state funding has to come. But until state funding comes, we have to sort of look at trying to get where we can.
What type of mechanisms do you see possibly at the state level?
I think I've heard from legislators that they're interested in putting a referendum on the ballot for 2020 on Prop 13 reform and passing a legislation that would make corporations, there's these antiquated corporate tax loopholes where corporations haven't paid their fair share. So I think they want to address that. I think there are probably a lot of fear for a lot of people who remember Prop 13 as legislation that existed to keep folks in their homes. I think we need to do more work to really remind people that that referendum will be to try to get folks to understand that property taxes from corporations need to, they need to pay their fair share. I think that's a big piece of it. I also think this AB 39, once it passes in the legislature, assuming it does, it's gone through appropriations and it keeps going, that's just to set aspirational targets. And then it's a question of getting the legislators to find how they're going to fund increases in education, which really, again, haven't really like risen over the last 10 years, as much as they say local control funding formula is now fully funded. I think that's a misnomer. It wasn't, it's fully funded, but not at the level you need for the new mandates they have upon us.
Right.
I, I don't know what other mechanisms can be made. I mean,
what about a corporate tax? It's a corporate education tax, you know?
I think that's hopefully
they're the end users.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think Proposition 13 reform is one that a lot of people haven't wanted to deal with. I remember talking about this with legislators because I did a lot of advocacy about funding, because I always considered that the main thing, because it's causing us cuts in services. But we used to always talk to legislators and they would always say, well, Sean, Prop 13 is the third rail. So what legislators wouldn't tell me is, well, that's got to go to the voters. It didn't go to the voters last year in 2018. Because I think so many people were putting a push on getting the governor elected. I think now is the time, and I think Gavin Newsom and others understand this, that this is the time that we have to make repairs to what is a broken California state public school funding and state public service funding system. We have to make those repairs, and I think corporations are benefiting and need to pay their fair share. I think you've seen report after report talking about income inequality, when we know that five people in the country have as much wealth as the bottom half or 50% of our whole population. There's a problem for me with that. I think we need to make sure that those who have give to those who need. And I think if you looked back to Eisenhower, if you looked back at Jerry Brown in his first iteration as governor, if you looked back to times in California when we had more money, I think just the last 30 years has shown that we've defunded social services. And it shows, you know, I worked in the prison system. In 1980, we had 13 prisons. Now we have 33. There's something
what
wrong with that picture.
Statistic.
That's a statistic. So I think we have fed the prison industrial complex by sort of starving social services. And I think it shows. And I think it's important for us to pay for young people and families to be able to have lives that are better than their families' lives. That used to be the American dream. And now I just see so many people sort of benefiting and so many more not benefiting from the current structure. So I do think that Prop 13 tax reform might be a big plus for us.
Okay.
Even so, that would not be enough, according to California School Boards Association or the Association of California School Administrators or California Teachers Association. If you look at all these associations, that reform in itself would not be enough to bring us up to the national average.
Right.
We are the fifth largest economy in the world. We are 41st, so they say, in funding in the 50 states for public schools. There's something wrong with that picture. We should not be able to have so much wealth generated and so much knowledge creation generated in the state and so few people benefiting from it and so many suffering as they are. I think we need to have a reform. I think Prop 13 tax reform could be a good one. I can't advocate for it, but once it gets in the ballot, I think we'll see that people will need to look at that to see if we can get more funding for schools and for social services, mental health, services for homeless, to address our housing crisis, et cetera, et cetera.
I'd certainly like to see, because technology is so fast now. I mean, I have a degree in graphics. I was taught paste up at Mission College in the late 80s, and now there's no paste up. So I think the technology is so fast that I think it's in the corporation's best interest to have a educated workforce. I mean, we don't have enough programmers. I mean, we're starving for STEM students, and I'd like to see community colleges be free, you know. And at the state level, I mean, I have 12 years of college, and I went to CSM, I went to Mission College, I went to Foothill, San Jose State, and San Francisco State, and my entire education cost less than $15,000. I mean, that was in the 1980s. And it's got to get back to that type of, you know, ability to, you know, put down $500 for a quarter and that's it.
I think you're right. I mean, I think if we invested in young people now and got them higher degrees, whether that's in a community college, Cal State, University of California, what have you, you would see a return on that as opposed to not educating folks. And we know there's less of a return on that. At the end of the day, folks like us, as we get into retirement, we'll be depending on a young generation making mm-hmm. sure to keep the infrastructure going. We need to do our part to give back and invest in young people and families now, because I think it's in corporations' best interest. I think it's in the collective's best interest. I think it's in the nation's best interest, certainly in the state of California's best interest, to work on providing social services that are needed, mm-hmm. and public education is top of the list for me.
Mm-hmm. And you just look at the homelessness, too. I mean, as somebody who walks and rides, I don't own a car. I'm on the street level with the homeless people, and I know them. Mm. And I know people who know them that they grew up here, some of them.
Yeah.
And they just gave up. At $15 an hour, $11.55 an hour, you're, what you have to choose in terms of your living conditions, you might as well be living outside, you know, and be free. That is their logic. It's so hard.
I think it's super challenging, and certainly I saw it in Alameda. I see it in San Francisco where I live. I've certainly seen it here in San Mateo County, and talk to folks here about that. It is a crisis that needs to be dealt with, and it's a housing affordability mm-hmm. crisis. I think that's a lot of it. I think it is also, must be said, got to do with the fact that these social services need to be provided mm-hmm. to folks who don't have the, can't believe I'm saying it, the luxury of a home mm-hmm. that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a.
What made you move from Alameda to here? Because, I mean, you sound sure. like a very difficult district, you know, Alameda too. Now you're in another difficult district. You like challenges, I guess.
I do like challenges. Cabrillo appealed to me for a number of reasons, even though I'm stepping into challenges here. I thought there was a lot of good work that could be done here. I was very interested in some of the work that was being done here, particularly interested in the population here. I mean, a majority of our students are Latino.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in providing for English language learners. As you know, my mm-hmm. career is sort of been based on that, mm-hmm. Starting as a bilingual fifth grade teacher mm-hmm. and then becoming an ESL teacher. I think this is a phenomenal place with phenomenal natural resources. I also was very involved with what they call the Superintendent's Environmental Education Collaborative. Mm-hmm. I think there is work we can do here that needs to be done to protect our ocean, to protect our natural resources, to protect coastside. And I think there's work that can be done that way. I've been very excited by Project HEAL and sort of mm-hmm. the work they're doing with gardening education and outdoor mm-hmm. education. I just think that this is a phenomenal place for young people to learn science, to learn about their natural world, to learn about environmental sustainability, environmental mm-hmm. education. And it's beautiful here. I think it's beautiful here. It does have its challenges.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely
mm-hmm.
has its challenges. And I think a lack of funding from the state and the mix between affluent and disadvantaged here is stark and needs to be addressed. But I also, it resonates with me too because I come from Southern California. I was intrigued and interested by how many Latino and Hispanic families live here. A majority of our students are Latino or Hispanic heritage.
Mm-hmm. The last 51%, is that right?
52%, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. At the last board meeting, we just recently passed a Hispanic Heritage Month proclamation. It was the first time the district did it.
I posted it on Coastside Buzz.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
That was nice.
I think it's important for people to recognize that in a way, Cabrillo Unified is a microcosm of the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
A majority of our students in the state are of Latino Hispanic descent, and Cabrillo is similar. Cabrillo has all those challenges and all those riches that the state of California has, and so it was interesting, intriguing job to me.
Interesting. Well, Sean, I have really enjoyed our conversation. It won't be our last.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you very much for talking to me about the finances, and let's see if we can get your message out.
I just want to say again, it's $1.6 million of our budget. It's $150 per parcel. It is a renewal parcel tax. No increase in the tax that's current. And there are exemptions for seniors and for certain folks with disabilities and contiguous parcels. So I hope, yes, we can get the information out without advocating for it. Thank you, Michelle, for helping us get the information.
You are very welcome, Sean.